Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is Mexico Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News, Alfredo Corchado. Noted Mexican-American journalist for nearly 20 years, he has worked for the Dallas Morning News since 1994. He was born in Durango, Mexico, and grew up in California and Texas. For nearly 10 years, Corchado has covered the drug violence in Mexico, which led him to write his first book, Midnight in Mexico, which was recently published. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Emily, it's my pleasure.
You have some music that you suggest to listen to while they read your book, songs to read by. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, it actually started not by myself, but really from readers who read the book, and one of them in particular put the whole song list, or a playlist, if you will, on Twitter. And I saw that. I go, wow. And I realized then that music was a big, big key in writing the book, Midnight in Mexico. I mean, you're trying to get off the sidelines as a reporter, and you're trying to write a personal narrative. And I found that music was very, very important in trying to bring me back to a time and a place in Mexico. Or in the United States. It's really on both sides of the border, like Sugar Sugar, the Archies. It reminds me of when I first arrived in California, the San Joaquin Valley. We lived out in the fields. We lived in a trailer house. And I was trying to be Jughead. And it was also a way to learn English. For example, the song Like Ben, it was a school assignment. And everybody had to stand up and sing part of that song. You know, Ben, the two of us need look no more. I realized later that we were learning English to the song dedicated to a rat, you know, which was, I thought it was fascinating. So I've had this habit, I think, since I was a kid, where I would always use music, put music, little playlists, whether it was a cassette or nowadays CDs or on your iPhone, etc., to try to capture that time, that moment. And when Midnight in Mexico came up, I went back to a lot of that music to try to help, I guess, bring into focus the memory.
Is that music listed in your book, or is how did the reader come up with the playlist?
It's listed in the book. For example, the book starts off with Hotel California, and that's because colleagues of mine, was also my significant other, we were planning to go to Baja California to do a story on Americans moving to Mexico. You know, Americans looking for an opportunity, which is kind of the irony. And I had prepared a list of songs for that moment, like in Hotel California was one of them. So we were going to Baja California Sur, and we were listening to those songs. So the book opens up with the Death Threat. And I clearly remember what we were listening to because I had just finished that CD.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely place. Such a lovely place.
And then you go on and you realize what the songs were, kind of in chronological order. It's the Eagles, Hotel California, Marco Antonio Solís, No Te Hubiera Sido. Lying Eyes. And that just facilitated the writing. I mean, imagine if you're my neighbor in Mexico City in La Condesa, and you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the guy downstairs is writing with the music blaring. I mean, that's what it was like. I should basically thank every person, every neighbor in my apartment.
How long did it take you to write the book?
I think the research, as a reporter, and as a writer, I think we procrastinate a lot. At least I did. I kept saying, you know, I need to do more research, more research. And then finally, I ran out of excuses and I had to write. So the writing process was probably a year and a half or so, maybe 2 years. The research was about a year, year and a half. One of the things that was interesting about this book, Emily, is that my mother actually kept all my notepads. And in my notepads, I mean, this is going back to community college, El Paso Community College. In my notepads were also songs that I had written. Before I decided I wanted to be a journalist, I actually wanted to be a songwriter. I wanted to be the next Juan Gabriel. So when I opened my notepads, I saw all these songs that I had written, you know, all those years ago. And that was, you know, part of the research, because again, it was not just a journalistic book, but also a memoir. So you bring in the two together, and the research really was much more interviewing my own parents, interviewing my own family, going to Durango. I'm from a little town called San Luis de Cordero, and talking to my relatives and saying, ¿Qué canciones cantaba mi mamá? What songs did my mom sing? And they would say Javier Solís or José Alfredo Jiménez. So that helped. All that helped put the pieces together.
And how many years was that?
That's a great question. It was really a span of more than 50 years.
Did you actually started your memoirs and then led to writing the book?
The backdrop of the book. I guess the drug war in many ways is the main backdrop, but it's really a book of you're trying to answer your mother's basic question. Why do you want to go back to Mexico when we took you from Mexico, when we wanted to give you a better life, when we wanted to give you opportunity, possibility? Why would you want to go back to Mexico? And so the whole book, I'm really trying to answer my mother's question. Why would someone who's, quote, making it or has a future in this country, why would I want to return to the motherland, to the homeland? And so you have to kind of take a step back and analyze the last 50 years or so to try to figure that out.
But Midnight in Mexico, though, that 50 years ago, you hadn't even thought about that because you weren't writing about drug cartels, were you?
No. And again, I mean, it's not just drug cartels, but a lot of the book also has to do with the immigration or us reinventing ourselves. I mean, I think the book is really about three things. The reinvention of who we are. And I think people on the border can identify with that. You know, how we go from one side to the other. We reinvent ourselves. Love. It's love for the homeland, love for the family. And in my case, love for my colleague and significant other, Angela Cocherga, who in many ways kind of introduced me to her Mexico City. I mean, she was born in Mexico City, grew up on the U.S. side, but this was her Mexico. And the last part is really reconciliation. How do we as Mexicans reconcile with each other after this bloody period? And how do we reconcile with the other side, El Mexico de acá, the Mexico on this side and the Americans on this side? I mean, we're connected in many ways. So reconciliation, reinvention, and love.
And with reconciliation and reinvention and love, how do the American tourists see Mexico now?
I think, I mean, there's no doubt there's a lot of concern. There's always, that's really the number one question I get from readers at the Dallas Morning News, you know, can I drive to San Miguel de Allende? Can I go to Cancun? Can I go to this place? I mean, it's hard for me to predict. It's hard for me to be the tourist guide, but I try to stick my answers to facts. And the fact is that cartels have not really targeted tourists, or they haven't really targeted tourist destinations. I always tell people, look, you just have to use more common sense. I mean, when I used to drive to Mexico from the border, from El Paso, and I go to my hometown, I mean, we used to like driving at night. We wouldn't do that anymore. You know, you drive in the daytime. But there's no reason to believe that organized crime is trying to target tourists. We haven't seen that.
But how would they know that if a tourist is a journalist?
Well, there's a chapter in the book where I talk about going back to Durango. And I'm going there, obviously, as a journalist, but I'm also going there as a son, taking his parents, elderly parents, to see my sister's grave in Durango. And I talk about how we were stopped a couple of times by federal authorities who I suspect were working for the cartels. And I suspect they know, you know, their aim is to try to stop people and find out who they are. I was very upfront. I said, I'm a journalist and I'm doing a story to see how safe it is for Mexicans and Americans to come back to Mexico. And I am in direct contact with my editors. I'm in direct contact with the U.S. Embassy. I was very upfront about that. I think tourists, again, I haven't really heard of them being targeted. If I'm wrong, I'd like to know. I mean, I'd like someone to send me an email, acorchado@dallasnews.com.
And going back to the music, Juan Gabriel, as you said, you wanted to be another Juan Gabriel. One of the songs that you selected on the playlist was Así Fue. That's the way it was.
That was a key moment in the book. This is towards the end of part one, where it's almost like I'm the native son. I'm a son of Mexico, and I'm coming back to Mexico to prove to my parents that things are not that bad. And I realize that they are. And it was a kind of a lot of momento melancolico, melancholic moment And that song, I was in a place called San Pancho, and this lady was making tacos de pescado, and she had these pirated CDs. And like, I needed to listen to Juan Gabriel at that point. I said, ¿Tiene Juan Gabriel? And she goes, yes. And she had the live version. And I went straight for Hasta Que Te Conocí, and Así Fue. And Así Fue was so important because it made me feel like that's really the way it was. This is really the way I imagined Mexico to be. And you have that whole saxophone part, you know. And I remember when I was writing this book, I think I listened to that song like 50, 100 times consecutive because I had to be in that moment. I mean, it was like the moment that you open your eyes and you realize, oh my God, how naive was I, or how idealistic was I? You know, the American idealistic in you confronting Mexican reality. Así fue. There's another song, Huapango de Moncayo, which is one of the songs towards the end. And that, it's like the pain and happiness of being Mexican. El mes de la patria, September, you know, the month of patriotism in Mexico. And you hear this song over and over and over again. And on the one side, it makes you feel like there's a joy of being who you are. And then you confront the sadness as a people. Here we are decades, you know, centuries later, and we have yet to build a country of rule of law. And that song kind of takes me there. I mean, you're driving through La Avenida de la Reforma, the biggest avenue in Mexico. You're going through the Ángel de la Independencia, and you're listening to a song, and you are de Feña. I mean, you are from the DF at that moment. I mean, just talking to you about it, Emily, it brings out all these emotions that I hope I was able to put it in the book, you know, try to translate in the book.
And what would you like people to get from the book?
I like people to understand that sometimes under the worst of times, and I think here on the border we've been witnesses to that, I've also seen the best of Mexicans. And some people ask me, do you really still believe? And I go, yeah, I mean, I really do. I believe when I see the resilience of the Mexican spirit, when I see their courage. And it makes me understand that we're slowly letting go of those paternalistic chains that I think have held us, have tied us for so many years. And Mexicans are beginning to learn, I don't know if you call it the art, but they're learning to be much more pragmatic, much more, hold the government much more, you know, hold them accountable to who they are, to what they are. Juarez, I think, is an example of that. Juarez by no means is perfect. Juarez has improved, but there are still many, many problems. But you go there and you see a much more active civil society. And I want people to understand that when you read Midnight in Mexico, yes, the title Midnight in Mexico, it really is about looking for that flickering light in the darkest, darkest moment of the night, a long, long night, and still believing in the promise of a new day.
Which song would make you feel that?
Luna.
Luna. Tell me about Luna.
Luna, the unplugged version of Zoé. I mean, as I was finishing up the book, I was in that moment of Zoé. You know, Luna, the volcanoes, the moon, the rain. I think the rain plays a whole theme throughout the book. At one point, I even thought of changing the name from Midnight in Mexico to another name for rain. But that song, I mean, we were having a family get-together in El Paso in the backyard, and I thought, oh my God, what if it rains? And it rained, and that song was just blaring and blaring, and I kept just putting, you know, pressing repeat, repeat. And so that the book opens up with the volcanoes, and opens with El Mar, the sea, and I wanted to remember that at the end, and Luna just was able to capture that.
And what's in the future? Another book?
My future, I maybe not, you're not going to believe this, but I really miss journalism. I miss going out and telling stories. I mean, the book tour has been incredible. I think the book experience has been much, much more intense than I ever imagined. It's been interesting to see people wanting to connect with Mexico or reconnect, whether Americans who want to go back to San Pancho or San Miguel Allende or Cancun or Mexico City, Guadalajara. But also it's been interesting to see the number of Americans of Mexican descent who say, I want to be able to connect with the land of my ancestors. And somehow either reading the book or listening to the songs in the book make me feel a little more proud of who I am. That in itself has been, you know, something that I didn't expect. I didn't want people to read this book and think, oh, Mexico is all gloom and doom. I wanted people to really come to terms with who they are and their love for my homeland. I always tell people, I can't thank this country enough, the United States, for having given me the possibility, the opportunities, and giving me the chance to go back to Mexico on my terms. But I still care enough about my homeland that you still want to see the other side bloom. And it's incredible to share that feeling with other people on this side of the border, people who really believe that Mexico's better days are still ahead of us.
And music reflects that a lot, doesn't it?
Music is really, I think, the thing that bound this book. I was able to bind this book. Music and tequila, you know. It was the agave, and it was the drums and, you know, Mexico en la piel, de Luis Miguel.
Si se lleva Mexico en la piel, como el buen tequila de esta tierra.
La Bikina. I mean, all those songs, you know, you're listening to it and it's late afternoon, early evening, and you're having a Siembra Azul Blanco, you're in the moment.
And as you're writing, finishing off Midnight in Mexico.
I remember I wrote that and I put out an email. I think it was a message on online. I said something like 86,000 words later, this book is done. And it was this instant gratification. And I remember I went straight, got a shot of tequila and then listened to Juan Gabriel, and it was Midnight in Mexico.
And that song of Juan Gabriel?
That song Juan Gabriel was 26 minutes. Imagine the poor neighbors, you know? Because again, when you're in that moment, you don't want to let go of that. So you just keep pressing repeat, 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 and it just keeps coming back.
Well, I really appreciate you coming down and telling us all about this wonderful book and to be able to understand what Mexico is, because many people who are maybe fourth generation who have never even stepped a foot in Mexico, what would you tell them?
I would tell them how important it is to know your history and your culture and so forth. I mean, I always find it interesting if I'm in New York City or other parts of the country, and people celebrate their Jewish roots or their Irish roots. I always tell people, we are honoring Mexico anytime we eat Mexican food or we listen to music or we have a drink, you know, el agave or mezcal. We are honoring Mexico. What better way to honor Mexico than to understand? Because Mexico isn't going anywhere. I mean, I think that's the thing we have to understand is as much as we want to get away from Mexico, and I think some of us do, it's not going to go away. I mean, that 2,000-mile border will always be there. And sometimes that border, Carlos Fuentes once said, you know, the border is a scar. I think we are the wound, and we have to come to terms with that wound and how to best heal it in order for the two of us, you know, Mexico and the United States, to move forward. Can you imagine a prosperous Mexico? I think Mexico has always had this reputation of, you know, corruption and so forth, which is very legitimate. I mean, it's there. But there's also another side to Mexico that's coming and it's growing. And I would challenge listeners to think about that, too.
And what side is that?
The prosperous. I mean, sometimes as a reporter, it really is like covering two Mexicos. There's a troubled, violent regions, but there's also another part of Mexico that's much more prosperous, that's growing, where people don't really think about migrating to the United States as other generations have. It's always interesting to, if I go to the Bajío, which is central Mexico, it's the capital of a big industry like aerospace industry or auto plants. And people say, well, you know what? I still think about going to the United States, but more out of curiosity than out of necessity. And it makes you think, it makes you kind of imagine and question, will Americans miss Mexicans someday? Because they're not going to come in the same numbers because of economic opportunity, but also because of demographic shift. It used to be families had 7 children to 1. Now it's 2. So I think long term, you know, we might see that big shift and we might question what happened to the Mexicans. Where are the Mexicans? It's a possibility that you can't discard.
And what would you tell a young person, especially not knowing how Mexico is, or how do you become proud of being Mexican?
I mean, it's a challenge that I face with my own family, my own young generations, and I try to get into it in the book. As I finish the book and I bring up the younger generations and how removed they are from Mexico. And I feel like we are removed, even at the house, I mean, at our home, where the only times you hear Spanish is when my parents are speaking Spanish, or when me or my sisters or my brothers are addressing them. But among ourselves, I mean, we've become so assimilated that Spanish is becoming more and more distant. It's a huge, huge tragedy because we are losing a big part of who we are. I mean, in the end, Emily, I think if we embrace the American side and the Mexican side, we're really more than two. At least that's how I feel. I've always felt that by embracing both sides of the border, I'm not 1.5 or 2 or less than 1. I'm really more than 2. There's a gift that I think my parents have passed on to me. It was the love for my homeland and the music and the words and so forth, you know. And I hope I can translate that to the younger generations. This book is coming out in Spanish in the fall. And I'm hoping that my Mexican side of the family can also read it and they can feel the sense of pride of being an American of Mexican descent and a Mexican of American descent or American roots.
Midnight in Mexico just came out with Alfredo Corchado, Mexican-American journalist. Thank you very much for joining us, for bridging the community, por ser un puente a la comunidad. Like here on Puentes.
I got to tell you, this has been a fascinating interview because you have really focused on my love, which is music, and I thank you for that.
And you're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.